You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so this could get a little uncomfortable, but I was having a text conversation with a friend of ours yesterday who does a lot of Astros work. He's not an employee of the team, but we were getting into a conversation about Jeff Bagwell and the press conference from a couple of days ago, the Jose Abreu press conference, and kind of just the power that Jeff Bagwell clearly has, which is fine. Like, thus far, I've been a fan of what the Astros have done this offseason, and I'm really fond of Jeff Bagwell. But we know that sometimes if somebody gathers a certain amount of power and you get more power, now you look and you're like, wow, this is in the vision that I envisioned. I need to make sure this stays in place. I got to gather as much power as I possibly can. That possibility does exist that that could happen. I don't think it will, but it does exist that it could happen. The person I was texting with invoked the name Jack Easterby, perhaps jokingly, jokingly, but perhaps somewhat seriously, and said, and the last time we saw this, it might have been Jack Easterby gathering a lot of power, you know, just kind of laying in the weeds and giving recommendations and taking a look at a lot of things. And
I was so blessed.
Yada, yada, yada. He's the interim GM, and he's running ticket sales and marketing and media relations. And what?
I'm not saying, okay.
You ready for this?
I'm not. All right. Fine.
Sounds like you think there might be some validity to this. I don't want to put words
in. Oh, the lady doth protest too much.
All right. So
No matter what you bring up, nothing will change the fact that Easterby was an outsider.
I acknowledged in the tease that I said there's a lot of ways that Jeff Bagwell is not like this person. Let me be clear about that. He's likable. He's honest.
Easterby was the student athlete of the year at some college, which I as far as I can tell, was some college created specifically so people could go play intercollegiate sports. I could say it wasn't. I don't think it's NAIA or NCAA or anything. It's intramural college.
Right. No, Bagwell's resume is legit. Look, I watched Bagwell play high school sports. He was in our conference playing soccer and baseball in high school.
Kick his ass.
I was there. No, I didn't.
How was he as a soccer player?
Awesome. He was incredible. Yeah. He was a better soccer player than he was a baseball player in high school. He scored 36 goals his senior year in high school in soccer.
36 goals in like 10 games probably, right?
It was a high school season with playoffs. Yeah, probably like 18 to 20 games, something like that.
36 goals.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, he was an individual from the very beginning because, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you had to be fiercely individualistic to choose to play soccer as a great athlete. It didn't come like it. Kids at the school were going to be mad at you, man.
Not in Connecticut. Connecticut soccer was bigger than football in high school.
I'm so glad he made it out of that state. Without being
I am too. I'm glad I made it out of that state.
I know everybody. Look. In other countries, soccer is the sport that like the badass.
I guess there's a lot of it on TV lately. Yeah. That's what I'm seeing. There's a lot of it on television. So I love the World Cup. I'm just joking around. All right. So Seth, I found four ways. Seth, I want you to shoot holes in this because I definitely don't want the Bagwell becomes Easterby narrative to become reality. So
shoot holes.
I have found four ways in which there are at least inklings that there could be a Jeff Bagwell power play going on.
I'm going to put a deer slug through the heart of this argument.
I hope you do. I hope you do. I love Jeff Bagwell. I hope you do.
I'm standing 3 feet away.
Similar.
My finger on both triggers.
Similar. You'll have to shoot me. Just shoot the notion. He has the owner's ear with a super nebulous role to kind of start out this wave here. Here is Bagwell on being asked, hey, has your role, you flew there to go get Jose Abreu for us. Has your role changed with the Astros?
I don't know. I do the same thing. I bother Jim nonstop. So I think he's tired of me. But I'm just a voice of how I see baseball. And how I see the other things in baseball that just aren't numbers. Numbers are important, don't get me wrong, but there's other things that matter, and that's part of the reason why Jose is a perfect fit.
Well, so are you suggesting that because for 2 years we tried to get the Texans to give us some job title for Jack Easterby, and it felt like they went into a on a retreat and spent a weekend finally hammering out a job description?
That's exactly why I bring this up.
Okay, so obviously, aside from all the other reasons that people have already stated in their brains, I think the difference here would be that Easterby kind of wheedled his way into that position and would, I feel, plot and plan his way to be the guy whispering in the emperor's ear.
Okay.
Whereas with Bagwell, this is a symbiotic relationship, I think, between Crane and Bagwell. Bagwell talked about, you know, how Crane had helped him out when he was kind of in a dark place.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of like a it's a fruitful friendship.
Okay.
So he does have the ear of Jim Crane. The two-time World Series champion and four-time
That's a big difference
World
too.
Series attendee.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a
yes.
big difference too. Okay.
It's going to be hard for me to shoot these down one by one. So let's go to the next one.
Okay, the next one. Well, the next one is kind of tied in. Let's play one more from Bagwell. Just asked about, because it's GM thing and the amount of power he has. Do you want a larger role with the Astros?
I want to do whatever Jim needs me to do. You know, I'm not pushing myself to do anything. I know I'm involved. I know I enjoy talking the game of baseball, and I certainly enjoy talking about us and how we can get better.
If Jim asked you to be the GM, you wouldn't want to do that?
I have no idea. That's not really a thought of mine right now. We got enough stuff going on right now. Things are working okay right now, so we'll figure that out when it's time.
Would you interview?
No, I would not interview.
Okay, so that's another interesting cut on Bagwell's role. Seth, number two. On this, okay. Of my four things, I think if they're interviewing potential GMs, I think Bagwell, similar to Easterby, when they were looking for a GM after the 2020 season, where we all said, look, if I'm a potential GM, if I'm Omar Khan or, you know, any of the other GMs that they were looking at in that process with the search firm, with Korn Ferry, one of the things I know you and I and many others said was, I got to know what Jack Easterby's role is going to be with this team. I got to know who he is and what he does. I'm not even saying this with any sort of skepticism about Bagwell when I say he is somebody that if I were interviewing for the GM job, I would want to know what Jeff Bagwell's role is in all this. I think that's one of the things that got clicked sideways Jim Crane.
Yeah, and I think that's where...
a lot of voices in the kitchen.
I think the important thing here, though, too, is that Reggie Jackson and Jeff Bagwell were involved... They've been pulled into these meetings with the personnel guys all year long, you know, previous to this season. So it's not a new situation necessarily. Yes, I think that I guess they'd probably want to talk to James Click about just what it was like. You know, does James Click on some level feel like it was Bagwell that actually undermined him? And I'll remind everybody, too, that Click actually made things more old school than Luno. He brought back a lot of the actual scouts and some of the traditional baseball things that Luno had completely done away with. You got the sense with Luno that he was working on some AI program that was going to be running the team. So that part is, I guess, understandable and relevant. I think as far as Bagwell saying, you know, he doesn't want to be the GM, and one of our texters said, boy, the texters are really weighing in.
I know.
I lost it all. I lost it already because the guy was so. Damn it. I lost the text because so many people texted in. I think that Bagwell is one of the most genuine superstar athletes you'll ever meet, I think.
Yes.
And, you know, that's not just from, you know, having a casual conversations or listening to people or anything. That's resoundingly the opinion of people. And it's ironic because I'm going back to the Moneyball book where I first saw this story. But was the first baseman in Moneyball, Scott Hatterberg.
Yeah.
He talked about how much he loved moving from catcher to first base, because at first base you could actually talk to guys. And he specifically brought up Bagwell and how Hatterberg would tell Bagwell, man, I love your stance. Like, and he would gush over Bagwell because he was so intrigued. And Bagwell would always respond like, nah, man, I suck. My stance is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, he beats himself up.
He does.
He's old school.
Yep.
In the way that before, before all these guys started working with sports psychologists and everything, there was a whole lot of self-doubt that fueled the great ones.
Yes.
And I feel like Bagwell is great and old school in that regard.
No doubt.
He still very much doubts himself.
Okay, I want to get to these last two. Four ways.
I will never let you finish
this. Four Bagwell Easterby comps that I'm letting Seth tear into. I got to get to these last two because we got to read some of these texts.
Okay.
number three. He is fundamentally opposed to at least a part of the Astros' recent culture.
Personally, for me, yes. I just think that there are certain things that go on that the numbers can't explain. Because this game is played by humans, man. It's not played by computers. And there's a lot of things that go on. You know, stuff that's in those doors over there or on the field. There's stuff that goes on at home. A lot of things that can happen throughout a year that mean something. And, you know, it affects players in certain ways. And being able to know that and being able to, that's what Dusty does so great, is he knows his players so well on and off the field, which makes it a lot easier for him to manage because he has the communication with the guys and understands.
Okay, let me reiterate then. Yes, because I see this a lot. People saying, oh my gosh, oh, wait a second, but they just won a World Series, and now Jeff Bagwell, all of a sudden, he's going to have a voice and things and everything. Oh, and they faint, mm-hmm. like ladies in a movie about the 1800s. No, Bagwell, as previously stated, was involved in personnel meetings this year. He's had the ear of Jim Crane for a long time. And oh, I'm sorry. Did they actually win a World Series this year?
They did.
As opposed to previous years in which Jeff Bagwell was not taking as active a role?
It's a good observation by you.
I'm sorry that they're retaining the guy
yep.
to do exactly the same thing he was doing in the year that they actually won the World Series. Right. Go die, everybody.
Okay, that wasn't even a hotkey. Seth is that was yeah. raw right there. All right, last one, number four. Bagwell Easterby comps. Possibly making room to hire some of his buddies in positions of prominence. Here's Bagwell on Brad Ausmus.
Yeah, I think for the right things, I think Brad would be an amazing front office guy. I think he can use analytics and his knowledge of playing to really benefit whatever team he's with.
When you say front office guy, does that mean GM?
Yeah, eventually. It's kind of on his plate. I think he'd be great at it.
Seth?
Okay. He was specifically asked about Brad Ausmus. That's not news that he said nice things about Brad Ausmus. If they had said, hey, what do you think of Brad Ausmus? And Bagwell was like, meh. Then
that would be newsworthy.
That would be news, yeah. That would be Bagwell bites Ausmus,
okay.
Not Ausmus, a potential GM. And as opposed to various guys that Jack Easterby brought in that you'd never heard of, and like the character coach there. Oh, Josh McCown, by the way. Yeah.
I might need security leaving the building today. There's a lot of people angry with me about this comparison that I've concocted here. Trailer Wheel and Frame text page, everybody.
Thank you.
6387, one small flaw with your comparison. Easterby was a freaking moron when it comes to football. Bagwell is a genius when it comes to baseball. That is a fair counterpoint, absolutely. 7330, Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Bagwell cares about the Astros winning. Easterby only cared about himself.
That's the one I was looking for. Yeah.
Yep.
I think Easterby was very clearly a climber, like 100%. No doubt in my mind. That dude is a climber.
Yep.
And Bagwell's more of a, like, hey, I'm having a good time. Let's ride this wave. He's like a grizzly Matthew McConaughey, you know?
Yes, I do. 4080 on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Bagwell as Easterby is some serious 6 degrees of separation silliness. I think we've borne that out. I think Seth did an appropriate job of tearing down my hypothesis, not my opinion. It's a hypothesis. Yep. I'm just trying to point things out that if this were to happen, you might look back at this date and say, you know, Sean did bring this up.
I already just appreciate your courage in even trying to bring this up now that you're going to be talked about as the bozo who's – I heard some bozo this morning trying to say that Bagwell was as bad as Easterby. The problem is, though, Sean, thanks a lot. Some people who turned off like 10 minutes ago are like, I heard those two bozos
yeah.
saying that Bagwell is just, the same as Easterby.
You got dragged into it. 6043, Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Sean, you're barking up the wrong tree, buddy. Mark this date. It could be the start of the downfall of your radio career. Man, if I had a dime for every time people were earmarking the downfall of my radio career,
dude,
I would have a stack of dimes this high.
The funny thing is that, no, the downfall would be if you didn't lean into it. This is like this is a Colin Coward bit if I've ever
seen. Hell yes.
Colin Coward would just have he would have run circles around us with doing this right now, and he would have, and everybody would say he needs to be fired, and he would just be laughing all the way to the Millionaire Club.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This is Middle Screen on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Qualifications and knowledge of the sport in which they have their owner's ear is probably not a great comparison. Yeah, no, it's not. I think there are elements where you got to go, okay, the main overarching thing is Bagwell is at a stage right now where you look and you go, okay, this guy is kind of laying in the weeds. He's got a lot of power, but doesn't act like he has a lot of power. If he starts to see a team constructed in his vision, does he get power hungry? I don't think he will, but I think we need to acknowledge the possibility.
I think, honestly, the thing that I hadn't really vocalized before, and I'm glad we did this, because if I ever have to argue against somebody else that's claiming that for all these times in my life when I come up and run into people who claim that Bagwell is an Easterby,
right.
I can say that, okay, look, Bagwell sounds like he's going to be doing a lot of what he was already doing in the year that the Astros won a World Series. So these Ken What's-His-Faces and what's his name?
Rosenthal.
Yeah, Ken Rosenthal and these folks can just shut their yaps because one of their sources probably got fired. They're still doing the same thing. Some of these Ken Rosenthals, this is the problem. Sometimes they learn about something and then they assume that, like, oh, it must just be starting now because I've just learned about it.
Right.
Like, no. Get your little pea brain working and wrapped around this thing. Bagwell's been talking to Crane for a long time about all this stuff.
Yep.
And he might just be talking about it a little bit more publicly right now.
And
that's the other thing, which I have said before. Look, all right, look, we cannot ignore the fact that, yes, this is Jim Crane, who has been to four World Series, who is a self-made billionaire, who probably is capable intellectually and constitutionally of hearing divergent viewpoints and picking different sides on different topics.
He's
a
successful CEO of businesses. Like, no, absolutely, absolutely. Last text from the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. 7443. Yeah, Auschwitz would be a great GM. He's smarter than anyone they got and smarter than most radio hosts.
Oh, damn.
Why did you have to do a drive-by on radio? Well, that was unnecessary. Why did you have to mix us into that? But it hurts.
Sean, I was listening to Sports Radio 610 one time, and it must have been either the midday or the afternoon. This is when I was a player.
Yeah.
And somebody brought up Brad Ausmus and Seth Payne, because he went to Dartmouth and I went to Cornell. He's a little bit older than me. But it was Matt
Jackson.
Jackson.
Yeah.
Was on with,
with Rich. He was doing afternoons. Yeah.
And the topic of Wonderlics came up. Somebody had asked me my Wonderlic. And Rich must have asked Matt, like, well, who do you think's smarter, Ausmus? Or who got a higher score on, like, their SATs, do you think? Brad Ausmus or Seth Payne? And Matt Jackson, like, did not miss a beat. He was like, oh, Brad Ausmus, 100%, like, Brad Ausmus. I was like, what? And I'm driving, I'm like, wait a second. Like, just how dumb do I come off in these things? Like, how the hell would you know something like that?
I think he was stereotyping. I think he was saying big meathead football player versus catcher on a baseball team, which is inherently a cerebral position. Yeah.
He was thinking, I would have told him, like, dude, you don't make it as a guy that runs a 5'2", 5'40 without having some...
Without smarts.
Figuring out a way to game the system somehow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, it's
it might very well be true about Ausmus, by the way. I was shocked that he was so quick with the answer.
Shocked.
It's honestly shocked and appalled.
It
was the most offended I've ever been by anybody who said anything about my playing or career. Like, I really was. You can say I'm a bad player or anything. I don't care. But, like, what the hell is this? I'm taking my mental power is taking shots out of nowhere.
It sounds like you don't even care the answer was Ausmus. It was how quickly he answered it.
I was like, he thinks I'm a moron.
Right. Not a moron, Matt, if you're listening right now. It's Watson week in Houston. We're getting you ready for Texans and Browns on Sunday. Texans countdown gets going at 9. Me and Seth, that's presented by Modelo. Kickoff at noon and Texans postgame getting started right after the game is over with me and Clint Sterner. We've had our first college quarterback announce that he is going pro. Is this somebody who is going to be there for the Texans when they are picking? Is this somebody who's on the Texans' radar? That is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we've got the first quarterback, at least that I've seen, among the ones that get mentioned as possibilities for the Texans. This one's not with the first overall pick, but I could see if the Browns pick was in the 10 to 20 range and the Texans didn't feel like C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young was worth the first overall pick, that this might be the route they go at quarterback. Anxious to watch more of him as we go through the draft process. Will Levis of Kentucky has announced that he is headed to the NFL. He could have taken advantage of the NCAA waiver for the pandemic to play another season. He's not a Stroud or a Young in so much as the two of them are guys that have been earmarked for NFL stardom from the time they left high school, and they are literally 3 years removed from high school. Levis has had a more kind of jagged, circuitous route to where he's gotten today, but he could have played a sixth year. He's already been in college for 5 years. He's going to enter the draft. Quote, this is according to Blue Chips, on a Blue Chips Twitter space. I guess that's probably either a draft Twitter space or maybe a Kentucky Twitter space. He says, quote, my intentions are to enter the draft after this season. I've talked with the coaches and the people I needed to these past couple days. I will be making a decision on the bowl game soon, but nothing is final. I'd be shocked if he played in Kentucky's bowl game. That's me saying that, not him.
Oh, man.
Kentucky will learn its bowl site and opponent this weekend, as will all of college football, including the TaxAct Texas Bowl. Levis is projected as one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, a likely first-round choice. Here were his numbers this year. Played in 11 games, threw for a little over 2,400 yards, 19 touchdowns. Kentucky, kind of a disappointment this year, 7-5. They were 7-4 with Levis in the lineup this year. They were a preseason top 20 team that you're in the SEC, 7-5 is going to happen. So I feel like for Texan fans, Seth, it's Young or it's Stroud with the first overall pick, and that if it's Levis with like the 15th pick, let's say, then I think they're going to side-eye that a little bit. That's my hunch right now, without having seen a ton of Levis myself.
They'll side-eye it? As far, I don't know, man.
I'm talking about fans. You know,
fans, okay. Yeah, I thought you were talking about the Texans themselves.
No.
Let's see. I'm going to read. You know, I love the unnamed anonymous NFL executives when it comes to stuff like this.
Oh, yes, yes.
Executives.
Give me.
This is somebody, let's see. It said, right after the at the end of October, the Tennessee game. So he said this before the Tennessee game. He's really good. Big arm, big frame, can take hits, can make every throw. His accuracy can get inconsistent, but he takes a lot of chances downfield, throws a lot of deep overs, but he's throwing a lot of pro concepts. Oh, Oh, they love a guy with pro concepts,
do
don't
they,
Sean? Oh, they love him so much. Mm. Pat Mahomes didn't throw pro concepts.
That's so true. Oh, my God. That is so true.
I don't
true.
Know. Yeah. Meanwhile, and by the way, the guy that ended up getting Pat Mahomes drafted anywhere outside of, like, number one every single year is currently on the hot seat right now in the NFL. So, let's see. What else did he say? But he's throwing a lot of pro concepts. They're showcasing that. So you see all the throws we'd ask him to make, and he can make them all. He gets the easy ones, too, and he's really decisive with the ball. He's just a really, really good quarterback.
Yep.
So, this is – I do wonder with Will Levis, this is the classic kind of guy where I think it's he's going to be very polarizing come springtime. I think there's going to be people that despise him, but others that think that he's way better than either of the top two guys. He just had to go to – he's just had the misfortune of going to Kentucky instead of Alabama or Ohio State.
Yeah, and he transferred too. I think he started out of Penn State and transferred to Kentucky. So he's been around. Like he's had one of those routes. I tell you what, Seth, he'll have better answers to the question, what type of adversity have you faced so far in your collegiate playing career? He'll have good answers to that question.
The comparisons are always interesting too.
What NFL guy they comp to?
Yeah, Mel Kiper's was. Nope, I had it and then I lost it. Boy, this has been a poor. This has been a poor functioning to me. Poor functioning for me. This. Mel Kiper had said about this. Yeah, he said Josh Allen because of his size, athleticism, and strong arm.
Okay. Does that feel here's the thing. This is the big mystery. Well, I guess not a mystery. I mean, Nick Caserio used his first pick as a GM on a quarterback, and he selected Davis Mills. I guess it's just different when you're picking as high as the Texans are going to be picking and looking for a quarterback.
Yeah.
We will get a much clearer view as to what Nick Caserio values in a quarterback in this draft than we did in the Davis Mills draft, because they're going to have their pick of the litter in this draft.
I guess the one thing that, because whenever I see a Josh Allen or Carson Wentz comparison for Will Levis, I guess the mismatch on the part that I don't quite get or understand is like, okay, at least those two guys, Carson Wentz and Josh Allen, were playing at lesser levels of competition where you had to project a lot so there was unknown upside. Whereas with Will Levis, he's facing that actual competition. He doesn't have the same level of talent as his talented competition does, but I think you can see with a better idea like exactly how much his inaccuracy or anything else might be holding him back compared to those other two guys.
Bryce Young would excite the fan base tremendously.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud, I think, would excite the fan base. Not as much as Bryce Young is my sense, but would excite them. What does Will Levis do for the Texans fan base? If you're a Texan fan, this might be a Pender poll. If the Texans used a first-round pick on Will Levis, how much do people get excited?
He gets me excited enough to get into my Volvo sedan and drive down to the grocery store and like buy a non-alcoholic beer without even using a coupon, Sean. That's how damn excited I am about
Will
Levis.
Spend the day in the produce section.
I feel about like, oh. Yeah. Why compare him to Josh Allen when you've got a perfectly good Donald Jones standing right there? There's something about the blue uniform, and I can't break it. Like, I was like, there's something. This guy's Daniel Jones, and I know it. Don't try to fool me, you sons of guns. And
for what it's worth, Dane Brugler, who I think he's pretty good on the NFL draft. I enjoy his stuff at The Athletic. He put out a mock draft this week, and with the first overall pick. Do we have the sounder, Ben? Do we have the da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na? Do we have it or no? You're shaking your head? Okay, we don't. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. The Houston Texans select Bryce Young with the first overall pick, according to Dane Brugler. The interesting, obviously the first overall pick is going to be tremendously interesting. That may be one where we know leading up to the draft who they've honed in on because they can pick whoever they want. The second pick is the intriguing one to me. Right now, it would be 10th overall, and Dane Brugler has the Texans taking Peter Skoronski, offensive lineman from Northwestern. How would people feel if, for the second year in a row, the Texans used a Deshaun Watson trade pick on an offensive lineman? Kenyon Green last year.
Yeah, it all matters on with Kenyon Green. You're also turned down an opportunity to get Jordan Love and Kyle Hamilton.
Jordan Davis,
What did I say?
Jordan Love.
You could have figured out a way to get Jordan Love in there too, if you wanted to, Sean. I'm pretty sure you could.
They do need a quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Jordan Davis and Kyle Hamilton. So I think that people are going to be skeptical just because Kenyon Green so far hasn't looked like a brilliant pick. I do think that I'm looking forward to watching Kenyon Green over the next few weeks. I think that, as one of our listeners pointed out, his real downturn, it coincided not just with when he started facing this slew of Pro Bowl caliber defensive tackles, but it was also immediately after he hurt his shoulder in the Raiders game.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't show nearly as much promise after he hurt his shoulder. So he might be playing through something right now. It's not an excuse or anything, but I'm just holding out hope that that's at least a partial reason. And it's not just that he's been getting destroyed by all these really good players. I think that using it on an offensive lineman, especially if you took a quarterback with number one overall, would be hard to criticize, other than just whether or not they coach the guy upright and whether or not they're choosing the right offensive tackles. Taking an offensive line, in my mind, is a really good idea, especially since Titus Howard's going to be a free agent after next year.
And Laramie too. They're both in a contract year next year. I don't think it's a bad pick at all.
I do think I'm not all that. I don't need them to take the most versatile offensive lineman. I just need them to take a good offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And I don't think Kenyon Green was taken with versatility in mind. I mean, I think Kenyon Green is a guard and a guard forever. I don't think he's a tackle in the NFL, and I don't think Casario Sound is that.
The guy I would take at 10 who was sitting here in this mock draft that Dane Brugler did that was still on the board would be Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver from TCU. I would love to see them get an elite offensive weapon. As you've pointed out many times in the last several weeks, Seth, that wide receiver is closing in fast on quarterback for the most, at least the most valued position by GMs around the league. But
it's
the impact as well.
Yeah. I think that people realize, okay, yeah, a great quarterback is awesome and all that. But boy, some of these somewhat mediocre quarterbacks, when they have the right receiving talent around on them, all of a sudden become way awesomer. And I think that it took a while for people to realize the rules had changed that much. That I think that the accuracy, I mean, I'm watching Tua Tagovailoa, and I know that they claim his accuracy is a thing. I do not see it. I don't see it. I think he's a really good point guard that knows how to distribute the football to awesome, awesome receivers and wide open chasms in the defense because you've got two speed freaks out there. So I think that that's going to become the model for a lot of teams. Like, well, look, it's a crapshoot with these quarterbacks, but we know who the good receivers are.
Yep. I think you use the cap space you're going to have to fix the D-line and the O-line as best you can, and then you take quarterback and weapon, call it Quentin Johnston, whoever, with your two first-round picks, and then you've got those guys under cost control for 5 years. You've got those impactful guys on rookie deals, and you can fix the trenches with some veteran guys who are a little more predictable, I think, in the performance you're going to get out of them. All right, we'll do some headlines. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Thursday. Join the drive with Sterner and Hughley at the Stadium Bar in Spring for a Miller Lite Football Friday tomorrow, 2 to 6. Hang out with the guys, have some great food, some cold drinks, and get ready for Deshaun Watson's return to Houston. It's a Miller Lite Football Friday. Speaking of Deshaun odds are out. What are the over-unders for this weekend? How many wins does Vegas think Deshaun Watson is going to lead the Browns to between now and the end of the year? We'll dig into those numbers and some headlines as well next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Thursday, Payne and Pendergast. Odds are out on Deshaun Watson and the Browns in the game this weekend. Browns wins over the next six games. Vegas says over under 3.5. That's a good number. I think you and I were teetering on this, Seth, because the Texans, I think we chalk up as a win. And then he's got a bunch of outdoor games the rest of the way. Every game he plays the rest of the way will be outdoors, presumably in cold weather. but not a, you know, not a ton of world beaters on their schedule. There's a Cincinnati game, there's a Baltimore game, they've got a New Orleans, a Washington, and a Pittsburgh game.
Yeah. Is somebody you know what, this is actually a good point, even though he said it as a joke. Somebody on the text line pointed out that this is a Jadeveon Clowney return to Houston as well.
Holy crap. So, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. So
wow.
Because we, let's see, the Texans have played in Cleveland the last two times, right?
Yeah, well, Clowney was with the Seahawks in 2019. They didn't play the Seahawks. He was with the Titans in 2020, but he was banged up a lot that year. I don't know if he played. Yeah. I'll go look. I think he's played against the Texans. I don't know if Clowney has played a game at NRG Stadium since being a Texan, though.
So we'll have that. We'll see if he leaves. If he tries to abscond through a tunnel like he did before that playoff game, Sean.
Because he had ticket issues.
That was fake news, man.
Big time.
Who was that that reported that he had left?
Lisa Salters.
She said that he had left in a huff. And, like, I saw him in the tunnel. Like 10 minutes after she had reported that, and he was like, I just went out to give my family some tickets.
In a huff!
And I was, yeah.
He was mad where the seats were.
I remember I reported that as told to me by source Jadeveon Clowney.
Seth C. Payne.
I think I gave that to somebody to report. Anyway, I don't like to report things myself. Too much. You know when I stopped trying to report things, Sean?
What's that?
When I was trying to be a good citizen during Harvey. And I misunderstood. I went around and did a few things, just kind of, you know, some stuff to make myself look good in front of the cameras out at shelters and everything. But I was at this shelter with no cameras around, and I was talking to a guy, and I misunderstood what he was saying about the League City water supply. I thought he was saying that the entire League City water supply was contaminated, and I, like, asked him again. And I don't know if it was because he or me or both of us were sleep-deprived, but I totally got it wrong, and I tweeted it out like as what I thought was like helping people out, and thank God within like 1 minute I asked like a third follow up, and the guy explained no, it's just this one street on this like one little block that affects like seven houses, so I didn't. As far as I know, nobody dehydrated to death because of my 90-second report on the water supply.
Thank God. By the way, this is Clowney's return to NRG Stadium. I was going through his game log. He's not played a game at NRG Stadium since the playoffs in 2018. Yeah.
So the reason I started talking about Clowney for God knows what reason, I think, was because we were talking about the Browns and how they might finish. I do think that there's a really good chance that Deshaun ends up amping up this offense to a pretty extreme degree. And I don't think he did. He didn't do anything special in the preseason, and I think people expect there to be a certain amount of rust. The problem is, unless Deshaun is overly eager and amped up in this game, there's no reason that the rust should affect him. He's going against one of the worst rushing defenses in the league, and he has one of the best rushing offenses in the league. They're fourth in rush yards per game right now. I think they're in the top five for yards per game rushing. Nick Chubb is a stud, and they're going up against a Texans team that can't stop the run. And the Browns, let's remember, the Browns are doing all of that on an offense that is now adding to it a quarterback who routinely rushes for over 400 yards per season.
Yep.
And he's got fresh legs. So I think the rushing offense probably becomes immediately the best rushing offense in the NFL. And I think it creates a lot of play action opportunities too. So this is I told you I was up at 3 a.m. watching a lot of old Deshaun Watson stuff this morning, and I got increasingly upset about what I think is probably going to happen this weekend. And it's not, I don't expect the Texans to win, but I don't want it to be a throttling, man. Like, I want them to make Deshaun work for it and earn it. Maybe they do. Like, I hope they do. I'd be really, really psyched if they make it. This will be my Rocky one. If they don't get knocked out.
Yep.
If they go the distance with the Browns, I will take that as a moral victory.
Yes.
Because I feel like they're going to get absolutely destroyed.
Yes. And Kyle, and after the game, amidst a sea of people smothering Deshaun Watson with accolades, Kyle Allen is stumbling around on the field and is able to find his wife. And he looks at her and says, "Where's your hat?" And she says, "I love you," and hugs him on the field. And he's like, "I love you too." And then there's the sequel is next year when Kyle Allen comes back and beats Deshaun Watson.
Thank God the NFL Rocky PA never watched that movie. He would have been diagnosed with 17 concussions after that fight.
And then in Rocky III, Kyle Allen gets a $45 million a year contract, loses his eye of the tiger, and then has to get trained by Deshaun Watson to come back and actually beat Mr. T. What and in Rocky IV, Kyle Allen goes against a Russian because... Anyways.
What if Kyle Allen comes back next year and he's all shredded up like Rocky III, like obviously on steroids?
That was great. Dude, the transformation of Sylvester Stallone in 1982. Very underrated.
Yeah.
Very underrated.
That's, as far as what the Texans can do, I do think that the weird thing is the Texans have crept up into the top third almost. I think they're 11th right now in red zone defense. So touchdowns allowed in the red zone.
Yep.
They do a good job of tightening it up when they get backed up against the wall. And I think the one thing I take from that is that I think it should be a good sign for the secondary. I mean, if you're going to play a lot of zone – The zones get a lot smaller when you're backed up into the red zone, and it doesn't hurt that the Texans do have some defensive backs who are willing to come up and make hits. Dez King usually has the hardest hit in the game. Unfortunately, it's a diminutive cornerback. The slot cornerback has half the hardest hits in the game.
Yeah.
Although Jalen Petrie starting to catch up a little bit too.
Yep. He had a nice hit on Tyreek Hill. If I had one prop bet that I would place this weekend on Deshaun Watson, Seth, because they've got ones up for yards, attempts, completions, touchdowns, interceptions, even rushing yards for Deshaun. They've got over-under totals. I would go under 31.5 attempts. I think Deshaun doesn't throw the ball more than 25 times in this game. I don't think they're going to need to lean on him, for one thing. I don't think that they would lean on him. I think Kevin Stefanski is a smart dude who's going to look at how other teams that are superior to the Texans have beaten the Texans over the course of the season, but especially over the last 5 or 6 weeks, really since the bye week. The bye week has done the opposite for the Texans of what most teams hope it would do. Most teams go into the bye week and go, you know what, we need this. We're going to come out, we're going to do some self-scouting, and we're going to be a better team coming out of this. The Texans came out of the bye week and have been decidedly worse and gotten worse and worse by each week. I think Stefanski is just going to look at it and go, yeah, we're going to let Deshaun throw the ball a little bit because it's the NFL. Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, this is your show today. Deshaun's going to throw the ball like 23 times in this game.
And I don't think you even really see much of an RPO or zone read game. Immediately, I was watching a lot of the RPOs that the Texans started to put in 2019 and 2020, and it was in fits and starts. And again, the problem with the Texans' offense was always – good ideas poorly executed. So they would introduce a new wrinkle to their RPO, and it would work great. Remember the little dump-offs to the tight ends? And it worked really well, and then teams caught on to it, and then they would try to add another wrinkle. I think that Stefanski's going to do it in measured doses, but Stefanski really likes the play action, so they're going to do that. But I thought immediately of 2018 when – do you remember Deshaun – one of the very first run plays, I think it was the first play of the game, he fumbled against New England.
Yes.
In the first game. And I felt like...
And Lamar Miller, yeah.
I felt like it took an entire year for the zone read to return.
Yes.
Bill O'Brien wouldn't run it anymore because he fumbled the exchange on that. And I think Stefanski has reason to just be appropriately cautious, because they don't, if they go into this game, they don't need to do any razzle dazzle to beat the Texans' run defense.
That's the other one. Under 34.5 rushing yards would be my other one. I would go under
for
on
Deshaun.
For Deshaun. Sorry. Under 31.5 pass attempts, under 34.5 rushing yards.
But one of the easier ways to get a quarterback into it, though, too, is to run some boot. And with the bootleg was the original run pass option.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, that was just, you get the guy out in space, and if the tight end's covered, then the quarterback can run. If not, then throw it. I would take the over on that specifically because I think they'll run a few bootlegs because those are easy passes to get going, but he'll have the option to run.
And too. He might go get 13 yards on a couple of those. You're absolutely right. I love the under on the attempts. I love that bet. Under 31.5 attempts. I'm going to be betting on that one myself. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Lovie Smith met with the media yesterday. Let's start with some injury updates. Here is the update on Derek Stingley Jr. and Rex Burkhead.
Injury-wise, the same in injury list will come out. We'll kind of stay with it, but Derek Stingley still has a mild hamstring. It's getting better. We're hoping he'll be okay. It's nothing season-ending about his growth. He needs to continue to play. He's missed a lot of time, right when he's taking steps up. He started missing time. Of course, that didn't help the case, but hopefully he'll be ready to go. Rex Burkhead is still in the concussion protocol.
All right, so he's missing a lot of time. I don't know. It wasn't a big deal to the Texans that he missed, almost 2 years of college football when they used the third overall pick on him. He's missed a lot of football over the last few years.
Yeah. It's Rex Burkhead is injured, eh?
So, concussion. That big hit he took.
I mean, that's
that affects what you want to do offensively for this team. Sadly, yeah.
Just like what if all of a sudden other guys start catching passes out of the backfield and
Eno Benjamin would be good. I feel like Dare's passed Burkhead on the depth chart finally.
They've
straightened that up.
Sean, you can't just throw somebody into the finely tuned machine that is the Texans' death knot. I almost called it an offense, but that's an insult, really.
You can't just throw them in there. They might get hurt.
Yeah. That's you might not be able to trade them in the offseason.
So there's the Stingley update and the Burkhead update. Lovie kind of echoes what I was saying about the Deshaun Watson pass attempt prop bet. He doesn't frame it as a bet he's going to place. That would be career limiting. But he says he doesn't expect the Browns to throw the ball all over the place.
When you're a good running back, I don't think it really matters kind of where you are a little bit. They're just productive backs. Chubb, he can run in between the tackles. Both of them have good speed. They can definitely run in between the tackles. They're a hard guy to tackle also. And that's what makes this offense, and that's why we can't get into, this trap of now all of a sudden they're going to become a team that's going to pass it for 50 times. I just don't believe that's what they'll do. I think they'll continue to do what they believe in offensively, and that's continue to give the ball to those two guys.
Lovie Smith and I are simpatico on this, Seth. I feel that's the strategy.
Yeah, and one of our listeners said that this will be like a practice for the Browns, so Deshaun will throw it all the time. I do not think that Stefanski will approach the game with that level of arrogance about it. It's it might very well be that, yes, that is the dynamic, and still Stefanski's going to take it as slowly as he can with Deshaun Watson. I think when Stefanski looks at this Texans defense, he's not thinking, oh, wow, here's our chance to put up 70. I think he's thinking, hey, all right, we can just play good, sound, vanilla football, and if we win our physical battles, which I feel we should, then Deshaun can get into his groove and get into his rhythm. Stefanski's not that kind of a mentality of a guy. It's not like Lane Kiffin coming in here. It's going to want to just try to prove something and embarrass people.
Stefanski's kind of coaching for his job a little bit. Lovie or Kingsbury or certainly Nathaniel Hackett, but he's 4-7. They've lost some games due to some coaching stuff this year. He's been under a little bit of heat. The offense for the Browns has been pretty decent this year. The defense has been abysmal. But he needs to win this game. The big thing. If they win this game, they're 5-7 and they're still on life support for the postseason.
This is the thing. Postseason or not, and honestly, defensive performance or not, he's got the rest of this season to prove to Deshaun and Deshaun's agent.
And his quarterback coach.
Anybody.
And his marketing guy.
Deshaun will ask for a damn trade in January, man. Stefanski's got to prove himself worthy of coaching Deshaun Watson. Let's be real about it. By the end of the season. If not, then Deshaun will get him out of there. There's no coincidence that he's in Cleveland and he's going to be calling the shots. He's a young LeBron James, this kid.
He is.
Just without all the championships.
That's the small detail. Yep. So Lovie simpatico with me on something he said yesterday. This is Lovie Smith simpatico with Seth Payne on something Seth Payne said yesterday.
Defensively, you can always get an extra guy in the box. every snap. And for running football teams, that's life in the NFL. Yes, there's been great interior defensive linemen we play most of the year. We're going to play very good ones this week also. So, again, we've been dealing with that. We got to find a way to still run the football in, under those circumstances.
Yeah, this is and I've seen people – I've been a little bit confused because people will say, well, the Texans – are getting stopped in the run game because teams don't respect the pass and they're loading up with eight men in the box. No, the Texans are getting their asses kicked with seven men or six men in the box. At times, yes, there are eight men in the box, but as Lovey said, so? you run against it. It doesn't, putting eight men in the box does not guarantee that you can't run the football. A lot of guys, good rushing teams, actually like going against eight in the box because after you penetrate the front line, it's actually easier to have big runs. It's like Arian Foster. It's kind of nice when they put eight in the box versus Arian Foster because if he breaks past through, he can get past the safety that much quicker if everything's blocked up right. So, I think Damian Pierce was trying to be polite and nice to his horrendous offensive line the other day when he said that teams were stacking up the box because the first several runs, at least – I didn't go back and watch most of the second half up close again. Most of the runs in the first half that were squashed were not loaded boxes. That was just guys like the offensive linemen got their asses beaten in an extreme way. Like in a really, oh man, I'm not going to sleep tonight because I got to think about watching this in film in front of everybody tomorrow types of way. It was really bad.
Dude, the offensive line, you talking about that, I just get thinking about the offensive line. Like they've gone through all these new offensive line coaches. They've had the same offensive linemen, by and large, for a few years now, at least the important ones, and three offensive line coaches, and nobody can seem to get this thing right. And I don't know, man. Like, you're way more of an expert than I am, Seth, with this offensive line stuff. Yeah. Are they once again poorly coached, or are these guys are the high ticket guys overrated? Yeah. Are they doing, you know, you tell me.
I'm less likely to usually blame an offensive line coach. Like with the Texans, they tried it with several different people while they were under a Bill O'Brien, Tim Kelly, George Godsey run offense. And to me, it was always much more about the scheme itself. When there's indecision or when guys don't know what or where they're supposed to be going and doing, it leads to poor run blocking. And so there's that's part of it. The other, this year, those interior three offensive linemen just aren't good. I mean, AJ Cann, Quesenberry, and then Kenyon Green, who's a rookie, and I'm still relatively optimistic about Kenyon in the future. I think, and I don't hope that he's hurt, but I hope that the reason that he's playing so poorly as of late is that it does coincide with when he injured his shoulder against the Raiders. So I think there's a chance he might be hurt. Those guys just they need to get better. Like you just can't move forward with AJ Cann and Paul Quesenberry as your center and right guard.
That's where the shopping, in my mind, that's where the shopping needs to take place this offseason in free agency. You're listening to KALT and KALT HD2, an Odyssey station.
One of our listeners brought up a good point, which was if the Browns kill us this weekend, the narrative is going to change drastically. Everybody's going to say how Cleveland stole the trade. It's a good point, but I disagree with it. I think on the surface of it all, nobody that knew what they were talking about thought that Deshaun was a bad quarterback when the Texans made that trade.
Right.
So I don't think that'll be – and Cleveland offered so much more – in terms of compensation to Deshaun and in terms of draft compensation than 28 other teams in the league at least did that. And likely the other three also that, yeah, I don't think that'll be the case. I understand the point, but I don't think that's going to, I might be wrong. Cause you know, perceptions change.
Yeah, no doubt. On the trailer wheel and frame text page, it's an interesting one. I was thinking about this, Seth, when we were talking about Deshaun and scrambling and, you know, when we were talking about the rushing yards prop bet a few minutes ago. By the way, you're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. I was, in my mind, envisioning Deshaun out in the open field running and him sliding. And let's say Deshaun slides and somebody comes up and blisters Deshaun as he's sliding, gets a 15-yard penalty. Let's say it's Jalen Petrie. Be out of character for him to do it intentionally, but he's a rookie. who's had a lot of people talking about his tackling. So he gets overzealous. He hits Deshaun helmet to helmet, and Deshaun is down on the field. This goes to the text where someone asks 4-2-4-2. If Deshaun gets hurt during the game on Sunday, do Texan fans cheer?
Oh, yeah, they will. Yeah. There's a, not a doubt in my mind. Of course they will.
Will it be a large cheer in the stadium in unison, or will it be a sort of lowest common denominator that's very vocal?
It's hard to decipher that sometimes.
Yeah.
I think when Schaub got – you remember when people cheered because Schaub was injured? I was there. It wasn't like nearly a majority of people.
Was that the year? Was that the year he was sliding into the abyss with all the pick sixes?
Yeah. And because T.J. Yates came in.
That was a Rams game, yep.
Yeah, so I like now it does. It's funny. It goes by section sometimes. It's like any other things that we do is this herd species that we are. Sometimes a section will – like I'll look around the stadium and like same level, you know, same socioeconomic status and everything or whatever. Like one section will be like booing and the other is like sitting on their hands. Or one section's cheering, and it's and they're all Texans fans. It's strange the way it works like that. So I think there'll be an audible cheer if he got injured. There'll definitely be a whole lot of booing. I was on in Cleveland yesterday with Tony Grossi, mm-hmm. who's the guy that Baker Mayfield used to always get into.
Yes.
Tony Grossi has like a paid website. He's kind of like Lisa Ann.
Look,
it's a, pretty
his
much.
OnlyFans does not have nearly as many subscribers.
I think he's on Patreon or he has a paid access website, whatever.
Yeah. Long-time Cleveland Browns reporter, yes.
Yeah, so he was asking me about it. And what I told him was, if there's one thing I've learned over the last couple years of watching sparsely attended football games, it's that the people who are there tend to be like the vocal 20%. So at a football game, like we talked about, not everybody is always cheering. Usually, at any football game, even if it's a packed crowd, it's a minority of people that are making the majority of the noise. So I think it's always a little bit louder than I expect it to be, even though the stadium isn't nearly full. But having said all that, this grindhouse of an environment that I think some Browns fans think that Deshaun's going to face, it's just not going to be the same as like what the Astros have faced for the last 2 years. Every time they go anywhere, that's a full house. It's I think it's going to be relatively tame.
It's a great comparison. Here was some audio, Seth, that you found. What is it called again? The Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show with Jay Crawford.
It's the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show, which is also my description for it. I like these. These guys are. It's Jay Crawford, who's an old ESPN host,
yep.
and a bunch of kind of marginal former Cleveland athletes, and it's a bunch of guys sitting around just BSing.
Okay,
I like it. They stream daily from 11 to 1 on YouTube.
Okay, look at it's a live read for the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show.
It's actually kind of a high end production though too. This is like it's a good window into what that Cleveland fan base is like.
If you spend as many right, they can support that. If you spend as many years in broadcasting as Jay Crawford did, and you start doing a YouTube show, a streaming show, it better look good.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, to all the people texting in, I was very clear that it would be a small minority of people that might cheer if Deshaun got injured.
I know
the vast majority won't. You've been to football games.
Right.
I think we're a bunch of just choir boys up in there. No, some of us have records.
That's right.
I got tattoos in places I'm not even allowed to talk about.
Here is Jay Crawford in the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show. I think kind of validating the point that you're talking about, Seth, where Cleveland expects a much more hostile environment than I think we might see on Sunday.
I want to ask you guys about something Tim said. Tim said he thinks it's the perfect scenario for Deshaun Watson because he's playing a team in the Houston Texans that's got
the worst
one victory
team
on the season.
Yeah.
On one hand, yes, you want them to go against a team that talent-wise you feel you should be able to handle. But we can't not talk about the other part of it.
That's going to be a tough atmosphere.
So Deshaun, wherever he goes, is going to get the Michael Vick treatment.
Yes.
But it'll be nothing like what he gets in Houston because, remember, he tapped out there. He told the team, I don't want to be here with you guys. Right. So the players have that fuel.
Yeah.
And the fans also. Imagine if we had Deshaun Watson here, and next season he tells us, I can't win here, I'm leaving.
Right. So,
how angry we would be.
So let me tell you.
This is the one thing about that, and you pointed this out the other day. You did the hardcore math on this. Sorry, Bagwell. Sean went in and did some hardcore
analytics.
Counting.
What did I
so,
do?
So There are only eight guys on the team who actually suited up and played on the same field with Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
So yeah, there's some in the margins where guys were either on practice squad or whatever. It's not like this is a team that he's stabbed in the back or anything, like these actual individuals. And I think that at least a few of those eight guys are still friends or friendly with Deshaun Watson. So I don't think that will be the case. And then the other thing is what we had already discussed. It's just there's not that many people at the games. And if anything, it's probably going to feel more like a Browns game because the Browns fans travel well. And a lot of Browns fans won't put it on their Facebook, but they're excited to watch Deshaun Watson's debut.
Yes.
So I think they will be there, not wearing Deshaun jerseys, but kind of hoping that, like, all right, I'd love to have a tough moral quandary to reckon with. I'd love to have to explain to my kids why I love this guy so much.
That will be a topic. When you and I are out in Bud Light Plaza on Sunday, though, Seth, from 9 till, 11:30 or whatever, game kicks off at noon. That will be a topic that I'm monitoring during that pregame show.
Yeah.
The jerseys. How many Browns jerseys, particularly Browns Watson jerseys, are there? How many Texans Watson jerseys are out there? They'll be out there, I promise you. People are like, no. No one will. Why would someone wear a jersey of somebody who stabbed the organization in the back, who got sued by 24 women for misconduct in a massage environment? Why would they? That would be embarrassing. And I will say to you, we are talking about a football crowd where there in any crowd, there's a lowest common denominator. And there will be people out there who don't care about all this stuff that you bring up as to reasons why I know all the reasons you shouldn't wear a Deshaun Watson jersey. There will be people out there that talk themselves into reasons why they should. They feel Deshaun got wronged by the Texans. They feel that Deshaun got railroaded by the legal system or by the civil lawsuits or Tony Busby or whatever. So they'll be out there. That'll be something we're monitoring during the pregame show. Be on alert.
More Clowney jerseys or Watson?
Watson.
Jerseys?
Watson.
You think so?
Yes.
I wonder if they probably don't mask.
So, well, hang on. Let me back jerseys. Up. Texan Watson jerseys or Texan?
No. Browns Watson.
Browns jerseys. Watson. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Clowney's been there kind of for 3 years, but it's a one-year contract each time. They probably don't. Yes. They probably don't bother.
Are expensive jerseys
for the mass rollout. You can custom order anybody, but for the mass rollouts that you buy at the team shop, Clowney probably hasn't been.
We got to find out how many Watson jerseys got traded in. I'm going to text some people I know.
Oh yeah, we gotta I forgot find about the
old trade in that Cal McNair talked about on Reddit, and then executed back. I think in October the trade in for jerseys.
How many Watson jerseys have we seen at Texans games?
Very few.
Just a couple, right?
Very few. Yeah. It's this game in particular that I think we would see them coming out of the woodwork. Plus,
we're going to see a lot of we'll see a lot of besmirched jerseys, probably, right? Defaced. They'll be defaced.
They'll like tape over the Watson name on the back and put a different name. You mean that kind of thing?
Or they'll wear a jersey made of towels with Watson on the back.
Yeah, that I'm here for. I'm
towel poncho. Do that.
Yes.
Take a big towel.
Yep.
If you own one, Deshaun couldn't afford a big one. Take a big towel and cut a hole through the middle and have a towel poncho.
Yep.
It says Watson on the back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.